welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting programs from the golden age of radio. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. In this hour, True History, as we present This Is Your Life in Two Parts, dedicated to Charlie McCarthy, the puppet in front of radio's first ventriloquist, Edgar Bergen. This first episode from March 1st, 1950 on NBC.
A new milestone in radio entertainment, produced and transcribed in Hollywood. Philip Morris presents Ralph Edwards in This Is Your Life. Ladies and gentlemen, tonight marks another presentation of a distinguished series of radio broadcasts. This Is Your Life, starring Ralph Edwards.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you. Coming on our Philip Morris stage, Studio D, NBC, this Wednesday night, is one of America's most famous and truly beloved entertainers, and I'd like to introduce him to you now. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Edgar Bergen.
Oh, I'm fine, Ralph, and I'm really looking forward to your program tonight.
Well, now, before you get too excited about Edgar Bergen's appearance, ladies and gentlemen, I want you to know Edgar Bergen is not the principal subject on This Is Your Life tonight. I hate to disappoint you all, but he really is.
Well, it may be a good thing. I'm afraid my life would make pretty dull listening.
Well, I could argue with you with that, Edgar. We do know why you're here tonight, though. You're here to take part in the life story of a very good friend of yours.
Well, our paths have crossed. You're right.
Crossed and double-crossed because our principal subject on This Is Your Life tonight, ladies and gentlemen, is that man about town, that bon vivant of two continents, that Don Juan of stage, screen, and radio, and Mr. Bergen's business associate, Charlie McCarthy. Well, they're happy about that, Edgar.
Well, he's certainly going to be surprised, Ralph.
Charlie doesn't know about it, does he, Edgar?
Not a thing. I simply told Charlie that as a reward for being a good boy, I'd get away with that
still. Yes.
I was bringing him down to the studio drugstore to have a banana split with Skinny Dugan and Skyler Vance North.
Good.
Charlie loves banana splits.
Yeah, I know. All right, Edgar, then bring on Charlie McCarthy.
Now, wait a second and I'll get it.
All right, now don't anyone give the surprise away. Charlie doesn't know about this, you see. So don't anyone tell. Well, what if. Look, who's here?
Oh, well. Hello.
Yes, it's Charlie McCarthy. Oh, me.
Oh, hello, my. Bergen. See, I thought you'd forgotten about me, Bergen.
Well.
Where's that banana split you promised me?
All right, all right.
Who are all these people out here? What's the matter, Bergen? Is it a broadcast tonight?
No, not tonight. No, Charlie. No, this isn't our regular show. You see, this is Wednesday.
Yeah, I know, but who are the peasants out there?
Well, Charlie,
Bergen, where are we?
Well, you see, we're in Studio D at NBC.
NBC? Bergen, you Benedict Arnold, you.
Charlie, how are you tonight?
Oh, hello. Hello. Who is this joker?
No, no, no. That's Mr. Ralph Edwards, and he has a program called This Is Your Life, sponsored by Philip Morris.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh. Where's that banana split you promised me?
Charlie, I'm going to let you in on a little secret. By the way, I wish you'd call me Ralph, Charlie.
Okay, Ralph? Friendly cuss, isn't he?
Charlie, it's your life story that's going to be revealed. All the facts from your birth right up to the present time.
My life?
Yes.
You mean little old Charlie McCarthy?
Yes, Charlie.
Not Bergen's
life? No, Charlie.
You mean it's really on the up and up?
Yes. Yes, it is, Charlie. Tonight, we're going to reveal all the details of your life.
Are you sure you can handle it, Mr. Edwards?
Well, we'll.
you know, they burned my diary in Boston, you know. It was a nasty mess.
Now, Charlie, it's a great honor being paid you
Fergin, are you sure that we're not being taken?
No.
Charlie, really, this is for real. Now, will you please sit right here in our chair of surprises, huh? Right here.
Darned if he isn't serious, Fergin.
Are you comfortable, Charlie?
Yes, thank you, yes.
You want a little water over here?
No, not now, thank you.
Well, just relax and enjoy yourself, huh?
Yes, sir, yes. Am I close enough to the mic?
Yes, I think I'll put the mic right over there.
You're not going to leave me, Bergen?
No, I won't leave you, no. I'll be right.
I feel silly.
This is your life, Charlie McCarthy. Charlie McCarthy, born 1919, when your good friend Edgar Bergen is a 16-year-old student at Lakeview High School, Chicago.
Ralph, whoa. I thought you said you had the facts.
Well, what do you mean, Charlie?
Bergen, he says I was born when you were 16.
What about it, Charlie?
I couldn't be that old.
No, but you are, Charlie.
Nobody could be that old.
Ralph Edwards has the facts, Charlie.
Yes, we have.
Yeah, he has he? Yeah. Then he can tell me something I've always wanted to know. Ralph, just how was I born?
Well, Charlie, to be blunt about it...
Yeah?
Hold on, Ralph. Do you mind if I tell Charlie about
all
how
right,
he
Edgar,
was
maybe
born?
Maybe you'd better, yes.
Yeah. Charlie, this is a rather delicate matter.
Yes.
I remember very well... I don't exactly quite know how to tell you about this, but of course everything, Charlie, has to have a beginning.
Yes.
As flowers grow from just little seeds.
Yes.
And from the little eggs, we get birds, we get chickens.
Yeah. You've told me all that before, Bergen, but how was I born?
Edgar, perhaps you'd rather if I explain.
No, yes.
Charlie, I guess you could almost say you came out of Mr. Bergen's mind.
Gad, you mean I was born an orphan?
No.
You could almost say, Edgar, that Charlie really made his first appearance in your medieval history book. Isn't that right?
Yes, Charlie, yes. You first appeared in my medieval history book.
You mean Charlemagne McCarthy?
No.
It's 1922, and in the classroom at Lakeview High School, a boy with a thick shock of hair sits at a desk. And while the rest of the class is studying, he is idly sketching a picture in a medieval history book.
Was that me?
No, Charlie, that was Mr. Bergen.
Oh, that shock of hair threw me.
He was drawing a picture of you in his history book.
You mean, Bergen, you knew what I was going to look like before I was born?
Well, yes, Charlie, yes.
You were going to look like a red-headed newsboy who sold papers on a corner near Lakeview High School.
Do I look like him, Bergen?
Yes, Charlie, almost exactly.
Well, was he my father, Bergen?
Well, what would you say? Well, no, you see, Charlie, it's... Everything must have a beginning.
Here we go back to the birds and bees again.
I think what Mr. Bergen's trying to say, Charlie, is that he went to a friend of his named Theodore Mack. He was a bartender and an expert carver, or sculptor, you might say. And Mr. Bergen had him make what you might call a statue of you.
Mm. You mean before I was born? You did that, Bergen?
Yes.
Did it look like me?
Exactly.
Gee. Well, then, was Mr. Mack my father?
Well, no. You were named in his honor. From Mac, your name came, McCarthy.
It's very interesting, don't you think so? But how was I born?
Well, it's just like I told you.
Oh, I see.
...1922, your friend Edgar Bergen is in his last term at Lakeview High. And Charlie McCarthy, you're 12 years old.
I was born in 1919.
Yes, Charlie.
What high school did you go to?
Your friend, young Bergen, is flunking in medieval history, and his history teacher, Miss Angel, tells him not to buy his cap and gown because he isn't going to graduate. The next day, you and he do an act in assembly. Charlie was such a success that your history teacher passes you and you graduate from high school.
That's right. That's the fact. Yeah.
Bergen, what would you have ever done without me?
Charlie, after graduation, you join the Travers and Newsom Chautauqua, traveling through South Dakota and Nebraska. Fall of 1922, Charlie, and you and Edgar make a tour as part of the Abbott Lyceum course. Spring 1923, Charlie, and you're 12 years old. You and your friend, Edgar Bergen, join the famous Red Path Chautauqua, starting your tour in April and ending it in August.
Yes, Ralph. We traveled a big circuit starting in Columbus, Georgia, through the South, and winding up in Michigan.
Well, congratulations, Bergen. I didn't know you could throw your voice that far.
That's not Edgar Bergen, Charlie. That voice comes from backstage. It's a lady who was in an act in that very same Red Path Chautauqua with you and Edgar Bergen 27 years ago.
Yeah?
Her name was Isla Ulrich.
Isla Ulrich?
Yes, and here she is, coming through the Philip Morris Archway, flown here on a TWA Transworld Airlines Constellation from Chicago, your companion of Chautauqua days, who was Isla Ulrich and who now is Mrs. Isla Ulrich Hope. And here she is.
That's wonderful.
Hello, Charlie.
Hello, Isla.
Hello, Isla.
Oh, boy.
Isla, you look wonderful. Doesn't she, Bergen?
Yes, she does, Charlie. In all those years, you haven't changed a bit. Not an iota. You look exactly like you did 27 years ago. Same old Isla.
Same old malarkey, yeah.
Mrs. Hope, will you please tell us something about the Chautauqua tour on which you, Charlie, and Edgar performed?
Well, yes, Ralph. We played in tents.
Yeah.
Each tent had three shows a day. Charlie and Edgar were in the morning show for the children, and I was in the evening show.
We used to spend a lot of time watching you, Isla.
Oh, those Red Path Chautauqua days were loads of fun, Charlie.
Yeah.
It's good to see you and Edgar again after all these years.
Well, thank you, Isla.
Thank you, Isla. And we'll see you at the big party at the Hollywood Roosevelt Hotel in my honor.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. All my out-of-town friends are going to have accommodations there. You see, I've seen this show before.
Yes,
I'm going to get to loot. When do we get to loot?
Never mind.
Could I have a banana split at least? All right.
Thank you, Isla Ulrich. Thank you very much for coming here tonight. Little did you or your friend Edgar Bergen know that from such humble beginnings you were to rise to become one of the giant figures in the entertainment field, presenting on your own radio program the cream of guest stars from the world of radio, theater, and the motion pictures.
Sure, and I was a guest star myself once on Charlie McCarthy's program.
The gore and the jabers. It's Maureen O'Sullivan, isn't it?
Yeah, right, Charlie. Miss O'Sullivan was one of the motion picture stars your program brought into the American home as a guest.
That's
and
right.
Here she is, coming through the Philip Morris Archway. Maureen O'Sullivan!
How do you do, Charlie?
Oh, hello.
Hello, Edgar.
Hello, Maureen. It's wonderful to see you again.
Sure, and that it is, Maureen. Say, Ralph, how is me Irish accent?
Yeah, sounds good to me, Charlie.
Yeah, of course, I work under a little handicap, you know.
Yeah.
Every once in a while, I get a little Swedish tinge in it. I never know whether Bergen will sound like Blarney or Smorgasbord.
When Maureen O'Sullivan appeared on your program, Charlie, you and she discussed the fact that you're both Irish.
Yes. Charlie, is it true that you really came from Ireland?
Oh, that it is, that it is.
Dublin?
Well, right now I'm between This Is Your Life and my regular program.
Well, when you came into Charlie's life, Maureen, you were starring in those wonderful jungle pictures with Tarzan yelling all over the screen.
Yeah, well, with Maureen around, Tarzan had something to yell about.
Makes me homesick.
I'll bet it does, Maureen.
Well, that's kind of you to say that, Charlie. I want you to know you've always been a favorite of mine. And I'm happy that in a little way, I played a part in your life. Good night, Charlie.
Good night, Makushla.
Good night, Maureen.
Good night, Maureen O'Sullivan. Thank you for appearing in the life of Charlie McCarthy back here in 1939. And the best of luck to you in the picture you're now making for RKO, A White Rose for Julie. Well, there are many more exciting years to cover in your very colorful life, and we'll come to them in a moment. But first...
Commercial.
Yeah. Yes, Tom.
I know.
I wanted to. You've been in radio.
I...
Now back to This Is Your Life and Ralph Edwards as he helps recreate the life of one of America's best loved personalities, Charlie McCarthy. And here's Ralph.
Charlie, all set now to go?
Yeah, yes, I'm ready to go.
Thank you, John Holbrook. Yes, let her rip. Here we go. It's the fall of 1923. Charlie McCarthy and you and your associate Edgar Bergen enter Northwestern University.
Oh, yeah. Howard Street, Dempster Road, yes. Evanston Lighthouse.
Evanston Lighthouse. Edgar at first intends to be a doctor, so he takes a pre-med course. Mm. At first, none of the fraternity seem to be interested in freshman Bergen. Then one day, Charlie, listen,
yeah.
You give a performance on the campus, and the next day, four fraternities rush Edgar, and he winds up as a member of Delta Upsilon. Edgar yeah. Bergen becomes a DU.
That's right, and if it hadn't been for me, he would have just been PU.
Oh, no. Charlie, your friend, sophomore Bergen, switches from a pre-med course at Northwestern and enters the School of Speech.
Yeah, I remember that very well, Ralph. I thought Bergen was going to open a fruit stand. He kept talking about those pear-shaped tones.
I think I had something to do with those pear-shaped tones of yours, Charlie McCarthy.
The joint's haunted.
No, Charlie. That's another voice from out of your past. Can you guess who it is?
Well, what do you think I am, a Dunninger?
My name, Charlie, is Dale Kennedy. Don't you remember?
Dale,
I was supervisor of speech education at Northwestern University.
Miss Kennedy? One of our speech instructors, Bergen.
That's right.
Yes, here she is, coming through the Philip Morris archway right now. Belle Kennedy.
Hello, Belle.
Hello, Edgar.
Oh, Miss Kennedy.
And hello, Charlie. Well, are those pear-shaped tones nice and ripe?
Yeah, well, mine are, Miss Kennedy, but I think Bergen's have sort of gone to seed.
So, Miss Kennedy, you helped Charlie McCarthy's voice, eh?
Well, Mr. Edwards, Edgar Bergen was a pupil of mine. And in helping Edgar Bergen develop his voice, I think I may have helped Charlie McCarthy.
Yeah, of course. There's also Mortimer Snerd, if you'll pardon the expression.
I had nothing to do with Mortimer Snerd.
I know exactly how you feel. Of course, his tones are a little overripe. In fact, I think they're kind of on the rotten. Please.
Well, the Northwestern University School of Speech was so proud of Charlie McCarthy that on August 1938, he was given an honorary degree at a ceremony at the college.
Yes, the honorary degree of Master of Innuendo and Snappy Comebacks. Here's the degree awarded to Charlie by the Dean of the School of Speech back there in 1938. It reads, Mr. McCarthy has been a student in absentia for many years, following a similarly distinguished career in the grade and high schools during his youth. He is possessed of a capacity for research surpassed only by his ability to speak for himself.
That's right.
He is known for his wit and wisdom, not to mention his willingness to borrow all his ideas from the person nearest him.
Uh-huh.
A prince of parasites, violent in company, churlish in behavior, acid in conversation, wooden-faced in all relationships, and in all other aspects, a typical product of higher learning in America. Famed for his investigation into the value of timbre in voice production and nationally known contributor to a field of entertainment which deserves the fate he has brought upon it. By the Dean, School of Speech, Northwestern University.
Isn't that beautiful?
You received that degree in 1938 when you're 12 years old, Charlie.
Yes.
2 years later, Edgar Bergen himself receives an honorary degree.
Yeah, they lowered their requirements.
Well, anyway, Charlie McCarthy is so proud of his connection with Northwestern University that Edgar Bergen has given considerable assistance to a scholarship fund at the School of Speech and has thus helped many of its students, as he has unselfishly and without fanfare help so many people in so many ways throughout the country.
Oh, you're so right, Miss Kennedy. In a sincere and unsung way, Charlie McCarthy and his good friend, Edgar Bergen, not only help students of speech, but nurses in their training, and has made it possible for hopeful young flyers to receive instrument training by financing their studies. Hundreds of young men and women in America tonight are silently thanking you, Charlie McCarthy and Edgar Bergen, for this help. And thank you, Belle Kennedy, for coming here tonight and taking your place in the life of Charlie McCarthy. Thank you. It's 1926, Charlie McCarthy. You're 12 years old, and you and Edgar Bergen enter vaudeville.
Yeah, and you say I was born in 1919.
Yes.
I never knew anyone who became 12 years old so fast and stayed there so long.
Vaudeville, Ralph. That's where I spent my best years.
I wondered what happened to them.
All right.
I met Charlie and Edgar when the three of us were on the same vaudeville bill back in 1926.
Uh-oh. You don't have to tell me who that is, Ralph. That's my old pal, Ken Murray.
Yes, Ken Murray. Yes, it's Ken Murray, star of Ken Murray's television show, talking to you from New York. Ken Murray, the star and producer of Blackouts, the show that had one of the longest runs in theatrical history.
Hello, Ken.
Hello, Edgar. I'm sorry I can't be out there in person, but my Budweiser television show keeps me hopping.
Hopping? Who are you, Kukla, Ken, and Froggy?
Now, boys.
Well, I'll tell him. Now, please.
No. Take it easy, McCarthy. When I first met you in vaudeville, you were the number three act on the bill, and I was number two. Charlie and Edgar did an operation scene act in which an actress played the part of a nurse.
Yeah, we just had one beautiful nurse after another.
As I remember, you were the one after the beautiful nurse.
Oh. Bergen, you should have kept my big mouth shut.
As the years go by, Charlie, Ken Murray becomes an intimate friend of yours. And in 1936, when you're playing a very important hotel date in New York, he's responsible for Edgar Bergen's getting a salary raise for the act.
Oh, yeah.
How was that, Ken?
Well, Edgar was getting $500 a week for Charlie.
That's a lot of jelly beans, isn't it, Bergen?
I never told
Charlie. I know. I understand.
And I thought he should get more, so I kind of needled Edgar. I said to him, look, I don't want to fool around with small-timers.
That's
don't
right.
hang around me unless you're a big shot, unless you're getting $750 for the act.
Yeah.
Well, that made Edgar kind of saucy, so he went out and asked $750 for Charlie, and the funny part is he got it.
He did? Why, you double-crosser, Bergen. You never told me that.
Thank you, Ken Murray. Here in college, your good friend Edgar Bergen gets an idea for his famous operation act that Ken Murray was telling us about.
Yeah.
By the way, how did you get that idea for that vaudeville act that took you through so many years of vaudeville?
Well, I was still attending college, and I was just about to be wheeled into the operating room for a coming-out party for my appendix when I heard two nurses discussing a case. One nurse said to the other, is her condition serious? And the second nurse said, no, she isn't dead yet. And while I was about to go under the ether, I started thinking about this act with Charlie on the table.
I see.
You know, Bergen, it would have been better if the act had been kept under ether.
No.
As Ken Murray said, there were a number of actresses, Charlie, who played the part of the nurse in your operation act.
Yes, and I was one of them. I started playing the nurse in 1932.
Do you know who that is, Charlie?
Is it Loretta White?
No.
Is it Christina Grayler?
No, this is 1932, Charlie.
Oh, Velma Lee.
That's right. Oh. But now she's married to Johnny Dawson, the famous golfer. And coming through the Philip Morris Archway is Velma Wayne Dawson. Here she is.
Hello, Charlie. How are you, Edgar?
Oh, hello, Velma.
Velma, my love. You look divine.
Oh, well, thank you, Charlie.
Yes, Mrs. Dawson, who just recently built the Howdy Doody puppets that you see on television. Isn't that right,
That's
Velma?
Right.
That's wonderful. But as Velma Wayne, you are the nurse in the act back here in 1932.
Yes, Ralph. I joined the act in Chicago, and right away, Charlie became my friend.
I was no fool.
No, this is really true. If I did something wrong in the act that Edgar didn't like, why, he'd bawl me out, and Charlie would always stick up for me.
Velma, I was always putty in your hands, just putty.
And I've always been grateful for your friendship, Charlie. It's been swell seeing you again.
Okay, kiddo. I'll see you at the party after the show.
Thank you, Velma Dawson, for stepping into Charlie's life here again in 1932.
Thank you.
Thank you, Velma. Wonderful.
In 1932, Charlie, little do you dream that a few years later your name would become part of the American language, a name quoted on the floor of the United States Senate, that you would share regularly the microphone with such celebrities as Dorothy L'Amour, Maureen O'Sullivan, Don Ameche, Nelson Eddy, Ray Noble, and one more good friend, a man who once heard could never be forgotten.
Yes, those are the good old days, aren't they, Bill?
Yeah, remember the time I said I'd slice you into a Venetian blind?
Yeah.
That was a good one. I think I told her, wasn't it?
Yeah. Oh, Mr. W.C. Fields. Oh, he was a great man.
Yes, indeed. You really loved Bill Fields, Charlie, even though you and he had frequent conversations like this one.
I've been a fragile thing of beauty ever since I was born.
Yeah.
Why, you weren't born. You were squeezed out of a bar rag.
But that was all in fun, Charlie.
Yes, Mr. Edwards. I was very fond of Mr. Fields.
Yes, W.C. Fields was very fond of you too, Charlie.
He was, really?
Yes. Once after a broadcast, he said to me he really liked Charlie because Charlie called him Mr. Fields, and that showed good breeding.
Well, I'm glad Mr. Fields liked me. You know, he was the softest hard-boiled egg I ever knew.
Well, Charlie, I hate to interrupt the story at this point, but it begins to look as if our time is up for this week. How would you like to come back to our This Is Your Life program next Wednesday night and sit in this very same chair of surprises so we can continue your story and hear the people in person who shared the thrills and helped you on your road to stardom?
Do you want Bergen, too?
Oh, by all means. Will you, Edgar?
Why, we would be delighted, Ralph.
Wonderful. Until next Wednesday, then.
By golly, I still want that banana split, you know.
Charlie, I'll get you one myself.
Yeah, it's
next Wednesday, huh?
Next Wednesday, all right.
Okay. Good night, everybody. Until next Wednesday, at the same time when our principal subject again will be Charlie McCarthy.
With his straight man, Edgar Bergen.
Yes, straight man.
This Is Your Life on Tuned to Yesterday from the 1st of March, 1950 on NBC. You are listening to an hour of true history on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Livonier. Next, more Hollywood stars line up behind the mic to recall the life of Charlie McCarthy with one of radio's amazing performers, Edgar Bergen, behind the puppet. This was broadcast a week later on March 8th, 1950 on NBC.
Very exciting night for This Is Your Life, for it brings us further exploits and real-life visits from out of the past of one of the world's greatest Don Juans, travelers, adventurers, bon vivants, that international playboy and business associate of Edgar Bergen, our honored guest for the second week, Charlie McCarthy.
Now, look here, Edwards. Last week you promised me a banana split, and if I don't get it tonight, it's going to be This Was Your Life, Ralph Edwards.
Hello, Ralph. Don't worry about Charlie. He's been standing at the stage door since noon waiting to hear more about himself.
All right, Edgar, then let's get on with it. This Is Your Life, Charlie McCarthy. During your vaudeville career, Charlie, your friend Edgar Bergen decides to try to get along without you. He decides to get into musical comedy and writes an act called Apple Valley,
yeah,
in which he appears as Professor Swenson,
yeah,
doing a comic lecture as a Swedish dialectician. Now, in this act, Charlie, he appears without you, strictly on his own.
Yes, so you did, Bergen. And what happened, Ralph? What happened? Tell the people.
After the first show.
Yeah.
After the first show, the theater manager said, Bergen, go back to your old act with Charlie McCarthy or just go.
I love that line. Read it slower. Oh, I love those little things. Oh, why am I cursed with so much talent?
Yeah.
Bergen, you could never do without me. When will you learn?
Yeah, well, I don't know. Remember this? I was in the picture I Remember Mama without you. And I did very well, too.
You did?
Yes.
How many offers have you had to work without me since Remember Mama?
Well, naturally, there's been sort of a... Well,
Could you be a little more specific?
1935, Charlie, you're 12 years old.
Oh, here we go again. I was born in 19. This is 35. 19 from 35. See, that's right, 12 years old, yeah. At least I'm consistent, Ralph.
You were booked into the famous Ziegfeld Follies Review. And January 31st, 1935, you're booked into the Blue Room at the Roosevelt Hotel in New Orleans.
Oh, that was life.
Charlie McCarthy, you're not doing too well financially back here in 1936. However, you get a tryout at the famous Chez Paris nightclub in Chicago. Your act has only been going so-so during the early shows. At 3 o'clock in the morning, with the club almost empty, you come on for the final performance. Do you remember what you did then, Charlie McCarthy?
I sure do, Ralph. Remember what you said, Bergen?
Yes, yes, I remember. I was late at night, and there weren't too many there. We looked over the audience. Let's see. Wasn't my line something like, look at this lovely audience. Look at their fine faces. Look at them.
Yeah, ain't they a mess?
No, Charlie, we have here this evening the cream of Chicago society.
Well, it looks like it's curdled.
Now, watch your language, young man. Please remember, where would you be without me?
Well, where would you be without me?
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yes, I do.
And you know, Bergen, I can see your lips move.
All right, please.
That burns him up.
Yeah, I know.
You know, it louses up the illusion.
Yeah, I know. See, now you have me so confused, I don't know where I am.
Well, you're sitting right there and laying an egg.
All right.
Why don't you sit on my knee, Bergen, really? Ladies and gentlemen, I am practically doing a single up here.
All right, now, will you please? Yeah.
The manager was worried, but the patrons howled with laughter and shouted for more. Charlie's impudence paid off, and with this kind of material as part of your act, Charlie, you're a big hit at the Chez Paris. You're booked as a headliner in vaudeville houses around Chicago, the very same theaters in which you'd never before been more than a number two or three act on the bill. 1935, Charlie McCarthy, after your success in Chicago, you go to California and are featured in several nightclubs along the Sunset Strip in Hollywood. One of these clubs, the Casanova...
Named after me.
No. It was named after the original.
Oh.
The Casanova is visited five or six times a week by a famous movie star just so he can see your act, Charlie McCarthy.
Yes, and it was indeed worth seeing, Ralph. From the very start, I thought Charlie McCarthy was one of the funniest people in the world.
Charlie, do you recognize that famous voice from out of your past?
How could anyone miss that voice, Ralph? It's Mr. Cary Grant.
That's right, talking to you from his dressing room on the Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer lot, where he's between takes in the shooting of the picture Crisis. Cary Grant! Mr. Grant, Cary, you do more than recognize the great talent of Charlie McCarthy before most people out here do. Through your conversations with Edgar Bergen and your advice, you constantly encourage him back here in 1935.
I was so interested in the act, Ralph, that I offered to guarantee Edgar a salary of $500 a week if he let me manage him and Charlie.
Did he let you do it, Cary?
No. Edgar said he just couldn't take advantage of such a good friend. He said he wasn't worth that kind of money.
You stoop, you.
So, Cary Grant, you never got to manage Charlie.
No, unfortunately, Ralph. But it's been a great satisfaction to watch you, you little acorn, grow into such a great big oak.
Yeah.
So thank you, Charlie, for all the pleasure you gave me and the world, then and since.
Thank you, Mr. Grant.
Thank you, Mr. Grant. You were very kind. Oh, it was nice.
Great words of praise from a great movie star. Praise for you, Charlie McCarthy, as you stand here with your pal who first drew your likeness in a medieval history book back in Lakeview High School in Chicago. After your engagements in California are completed, Charlie McCarthy, near the end of 1936, you go to New York, where you play an engagement at the Swanky Rainbow Room, which now is closed.
Yeah, well, don't look at me. I didn't close it.
I didn't say you did, Charlie.
Or did we?
No. Charlie, 1936 marks the great turning point in your life.
Here it comes, Bergen. The loves of Casanova McCarthy. Stand by, Luella. Attention, Hedda. Well, who you got stashed back there, Ralph? Dorothy L'Amour?
Now, Charlie, please. Now, you can't stop it, Bergen. This thing is bigger than both of us.
Come out, Dottie.
No.
Hedy.
No.
Marlene?
No, Charlie.
Hello, Charlie. This is your old friend, Elsa Maxwell.
Elsa Maxwell? I told you, Bergen, it was bigger than both of us.
Elsa Maxwell, the internationally famed party giver and hostess to the world, taking her very important part in your life here in 1936 and speaking to you tonight from New York City.
Yes, Charlie. I remember very well that party I gave on December 8th, 1936, in honor of Noel Coward and Gertrude Lawrence, who were starring in Tonight at 8:30.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. Noel and Gertie and Noel. Charming people.
Yes, you were really wonderful, Charlie. That night, you certainly earned that salary of $150 I promised you.
Yeah. By the way, Elsa, when are we going to get it?
Charlie.
As a matter of fact, you were so magnificent, Charlie, that the next week, while we were rehearsing on the Rudy Valley show, I raved to Rudy about you.
She certainly did, Charlie. She was one of your greatest boosters.
Mr. Valley.
Rudy Valley, indeed.
Yes, Charlie, out of your past comes the man who placed you on the springboard to fame, and you joined an illustrious company introduced to the listening public by Rudy Valley, a company that includes such names as Alice Faye, Francis Langford, Joe Penner, and many others.
Ralph, thanks. But I want you to know that those people gave much more to my career by letting me have great stars on my show than I ever gave to them. And those stars included you, Charlie McCarthy. After Elsa Maxwell spoke to us, we put you on that first Fleischman hour experimentally, and you were an immediate hit. You appeared on our program every week for months, and you were wonderful.
Well, gee, thanks, Mr. Valley.
And now, from out of the past, preserved on record, Charlie McCarthy is the actual introduction to the American public of you and Mr. Bergen on the Rudy Valley program of December 17th, 1936. Whoa. Remember how your knees were shaking that night when the program came on the air. Listen.
Why? People have been asking me for the last 2 days, why put a ventriloquist on the air? The answer is, why not? True, our ventriloquist, Edgar Bergen, is an unusual one, sort of Noel Coward or perhaps Fred Allen among ventriloquists. A dexterous fellow who depends more upon the cleverness and wit of his material than upon the believe it or not nature of his delivery. Mr. Bergen works with a dummy, several of them, in fact, but this one is a typical ventriloquist dummy, except that it is arrayed in top hat and tails. Just imagine the dummy, and take my word for it that both voices you will hear are owned and operated by just one man, Edgar Bergen.
This is the part where you first came on the air.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. As Rudy told you, my friend here is arrayed in considerable splendor.
Yes, indeed.
Yes. And now, young man, I would like to know why you're dressed in tails and top hat and monocle. There must be a story in back of all that.
Oh, there is, stranger?
Yes.
Oh, there is. There's a long story.
I imagine so.
A long story. And a dirty one, too.
I imagine.
Thank you, Elsa Maxwell, and thank you, Rudy Valley, and good luck to you, Rudy, on your engagement at the Chase Hotel in St. Louis, Missouri. Charlie McCarthy, you're an instantaneous hit on the Valley Hour, and for months, you appear every week on the show as a regular guest. Meanwhile, the radio public's demand for the kind of laughter you provide increases to the point where on May 9th, 1937, you become a star on your own program, a program that was to win you perhaps the greatest listening audience of all time. February 13th, 1938 is an important date in your life, Charlie. Your allowance is increased from 50 to 75 cents a week. Charlie, as you and your friend Edgar achieve greater success, Mr. Bergen expands the work of the Bergen Foundation that he established. He gives help to young women needing financial assistance to start their nurse's training.
I am one of the girls who was helped by the Bergen Foundation to become a trained nurse.
Now, Charlie, you won't recognize this young lady by her voice, because neither you nor Edgar Bergen have ever met her. What's your name, please?
I'm Mrs. John Connor. But when the Bergen Foundation helped me, I was Olive Crystal Rundle of Parker, South Dakota.
Yes. And coming through our Philip Morris archway, now flown here from her present home in Iowa City, Iowa, by TWA Transworld Airlines Constellation, Mrs. John Connor. Here she is.
Hello, Charlie McCarthy.
Hello.
Hello, Crystal.
Gee. Mrs. Connor, will you please tell us what the Bergen Foundation did for you?
Back in 1941, I had a heifer which my father had given me and which my grandfather was keeping on his farm in Hurley, South Dakota. I was intending to sell the heifer so I could get my interest money to begin my nurse's training. Well, the heifer died, and I didn't know what to do.
See, if you'd been a nurse then, maybe you could have saved the heifer.
What did you do, Crystal?
I saw something in the papers about the Bergen Foundation, how it was associated with the number of accredited schools of nursing, and how you could borrow money from it and pay it back without interest.
The money goes into a revolving fund to help other nurses, doesn't it, Crystal?
Yes. I wrote to the foundation and received a loan, which I later paid back and which enabled me to start my training at the Methodist State Hospital at Mitchell, South Dakota. I know that many other nurses who needed help have been assisted by the Bergen Foundation, and I want to express my gratitude.
Well, I remember your letter because of all the letters I received. Yours was the only one that ever asked me to replace a heifer.
And I always remember it, dear.
I'll bet you do remember it, Charlie. And a splendid humanitarian project, the Bergen Foundation is. Thank you, Mrs. John Connor, for coming here tonight. '41, '42, '43, the war years, and you and Edgar Bergen are winging over the continent in all directions, entertaining servicemen to the Aleutians, Newfoundland, Alaska, and then... June 1945. Remember that date, Charlie?
Yeah, that's when Bergen and McCarthy took on a third partner.
A very lovely teammate for your organization. The beautiful Frances Westerman becomes the bride of Edgar Bergen. And a year later, Mr. and Mrs. Bergen present you with a little playmate, Candice Patricia Bergen.
Yeah, I remember that. Remember that, Bergen? Yeah. I was kind of worried about our team breaking up then.
Yes, you certainly were.
Yes. Yeah, I was afraid that I couldn't talk with your mouth full of safety pins.
But now, you and Candy and Francis and Edgar are one of Hollywood's happiest little families. Nothing out of your past to haunt you, Charlie. Or wait a minute, Charlie, is there?
Hello, Charlie.
Uh-oh.
Do you know who this is?
Why, it's Dorothy L'Amour, huh? It's spelled...
Yes, Charlie. It's Dorothy L'Amour taking her part in your life as she speaks to you tonight from Florida.
I'd be with you tonight, Charlie, if I weren't here in Florida vacationing. You know, next week I'm going to the White House Photographer's Ball where I'll be making a personal appearance.
And what an appearance. Dottie, sweetheart, my little old dreamboat, to hear your voice again.
Charlie, have you missed me?
Oh, Dottie, you'll never know. I remember the first time I saw you. Oh, you were so beautiful. And you still are.
Do you really think so, Charlie?
Oh, Dottie, when you pass an orange grove, the smudge pots light up by themselves. I mean California oranges, none of that Florida stuff.
I'm proud to have played a part in your life, Charlie McCarthy. Goodbye. Here's something to remember me by.
Oh, I want to go where the wild goose bumps go.
Thank you, Dorothy L'Amour. Well, there it is, Charlie, your past in review. This is your life, Charlie McCarthy, whose image first saw light in the pages of a history book sketched there by a high school youth named Edgar Bergen, who little dreamed that you, the child of his brain, would someday bring light and laughter to the world, that the saucy little boy that was his vision would become a reality, beloved of us all, that he himself would make history in the world of entertainment. And now for your Philip Morris future, Charlie McCarthy.
Here comes the loot. I can see myself getting it now. A banana split with a built-in television set. Don't tell me when am I going to get, Ralph. I've been looking forward to this part of the project.
Well, Charlie, because your friend, Edgar Bergen, has attempted to impart so much of his own knowledge to you.
Oh, sure.
In your honor, Philip Morris is giving him the Encyclopedia Americana, a deluxe edition in 30 volumes.
Isn't that just peachy?
Yeah.
I suppose Bergie is entitled to something, but now let's get around to me, Ralphie, old boy.
All right, Charlie. Some things happen only once in a lifetime, Charlie, you know.
Yes.
And the way to preserve them forever is to make a motion picture record of them as they occur. Now, tonight was one of your once-in-a-lifetime experiences. So, in your honor tonight, Philip Morris is proud to present your friend, Edgar Bergen, with a living motion picture of your appearance on our program. These movies were taken right here in our studio with a Bell and Howell camera.
Oh, that's nice.
Yes.
I thought it was bees over there.
No. So that his family can enjoy them over and over again, right in his own home, here for Mr. Bergen, and in your honor, Charlie, is a precision-made Bell and Howell motion picture projector guaranteed for a lifetime.
Well, so far it's 50-50 split, isn't it? I'm getting the honor and Bergen's getting the loot.
Now, Charlie, let's not be impatient.
In order that your good friend, Edgar Bergen...
Yeah.
...can maintain his excellent physical condition so that the team of McCarthy and Bergen will always be in top shape. In your honor, Charlie, Mr. Bergen will receive a Howard steam cabinet manufactured by Mr. O's products.
A steam cabinet for Bergen?
Yeah.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah. I wonder, can I borrow it and steam a few clams sometime?
Now, Charlie...
How about me, Edwards?
Charlie, listen, Gene Grant, the noted artist whose paintings are exhibited by the Associated American Art Galleries, is going to make an oil painting of you both, which Philip Morris will present to Edgar Bergen to hang in his home.
Yeah. Well, it looks like I've been framed, all right.
No, but you will be. Gene Grant's painting will have a beautiful frame on it. Charlie, because of your friend Edgar Bergen's interest in the School of Speech at Northwestern University, in your honor... Philip Morris is presenting the School of Speech with a Westinghouse television set. Uh-huh. A fine set because you can be sure if it's Westinghouse.
Oh, you're so good to me, yes. I'd be lucky if I get out of here with my monocle.
No, it's your life, Charlie. And in your honor, Philip Morris is presenting your friend Edgar Bergen with a special desk pen set created for you by Eversharp. Mm-hmm. The base is fine marble, the holders are real tree stump, and the shaft of the pen is a twig fitted in gold and engraved with your name.
Yeah. Well, that's the end. I guess we can go now, Bergen. You with all your presents and me with my, well, good night. Good night, Mr. Edwards.
Now for you, Charlie McCarthy.
Yeah, with me, with
Charlie, because we think that little boys and dogs go so well together, Philip Morris wants you to have something you've been wanting a long, long time.
What's that?
A beautiful, pedigreed, black Labrador retriever pup.
Oh.
From T.L. Spellmeyer, Santa Monica Breeder of Champions.
I'm going to have a dog, Bergen.
Yeah.
A pup for me. Ah, it's good.
Yes?
That I like.
And I'm sure your four-year-old sister, Candy Bergen, will also like to play with it.
Oh,
you let Candy do that, won't you?
Oh, yeah, that's wonderful. But don't let me interrupt you. I have a friend outside with a station wagon.
Charlie, oh, me. And for you, Charlie, we have something else. You can share with your little sister, Candy, the new 14-volume edition of Childcraft.
Aren't we getting a little intellectual here, Ralph?
And here's a great honor for you.
You mean another present for Bergen?
No, Charlie. That famous organization, the Woodmen of the World.
Get me out of here, Bergen.
Now, listen, Charlie. The Woodmen of the World have made you an honorary member, designating you as Chief Tree Saver. And the badge of your office will carry on it a motto you will love. Woodman, spare that tree.
I like that. Yeah. Maybe they'll put me in charge of a branch office, huh?
And now we have an extra special surprise for you, Charlie. We know, Charlie, that you're interested in being a cowpuncher.
Yeah, I'm going to be a snurd puncher, too.
Yeah. We know that you're particularly fond of Hopalong Cassidy.
Oh, I'm crazy about Hoppy. You know, bang, bang, bang.
Well, I'm sure glad you are, partner, because I got some nice presents for you.
Now, don't tell me that. No, it couldn't be.
Yes, Charlie, it's that famous cowboy star of movies and television, and here he is, coming through the Philip Morris archway, William Boyd, Hopalong Cassidy himself. Here he is. Hey. Oh, hello, Bill.
Hi.
Hi, Charlie.
Hi, Hoppy. Gee. Wonderful.
Charlie, since you're a fan of mine, I'd like you to have this complete Hopalong Cassidy outfit for yourself. Hat, shirt, pants, boots, gold-mounted gun, all the other equipment that goes with it.
Oh, gee, thanks, Hoppy. Look at me. Charlie Hopalong McCassidy.
Well, I'll have to be going, Charlie. My horse is outside and can hardly wait to get home.
Yeah, so he can chase rustlers, Hoppy?
No. He wants to see himself on television.
Oh.
So long, Charlie. Edgar.
So long, so long.
So long, William Boyd. Hopalong Cassidy. Thank you.
I gotta sit down. Ouch! Oh, I didn't know. I sat on my spurs.
So long, William Boyd. Hopalong Cassidy. And thank you for coming here to brighten Charlie McCarthy's future. Thank you very much. Well, one more thing for you. Something Mr. Bergen and I promised you, Charlie. We sent a friend of yours to a soda fountain to get it for you, and here he comes. Yes! Yes, it's Mortimer Snurd.
Hello, Mr. Bergen.
Hello, Mortimer.
Hello, Mr. Edwards.
Yes.
Well, Mortimer, did you bring it over?
Bring over what? What over?
Before tonight's broadcast, Mortimer, I gave you some money to buy Charlie a banana split and bring it here. Did you buy it?
Oh, yeah.
Well, did you bring it here, Mortimer?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Well, where is it then, Mortimer?
Well, on the way over, I ate it.
Oh. But you said you brought it over here.
Well, it's inside of me. I came over. Yeah, well, that's the way it goes.
but what about Charlie?
Well, you can give him this dish. I didn't eat that.
No. Oh, Mortimer.
Oh, that's a shame. I'm terribly sorry, Charlie.
On the way home, I'll buy you a banana split. That's what I'll do.
Yeah, when I get home, I'm going to use Snurd for a punching bag.
This is your life, Charlie McCarthy. The story of an eternal small boy whose life entwined with that of Edgar Bergen's to become a giant in the world of entertainment, bringing joy and laughter to millions. This Is Your Life is deeply honored to have had you as its principal subject, and Edgar Bergen with you these past 2 weeks. Good night, Edgar Bergen.
Good night, Ralph.
Good night, Charlie McCarthy.
Yeah, good night, and thank you for a wonderful experience. And I just want to say, if I had my life to live over again, I'd make the same mistakes, only I'd start sooner.
Until next Wednesday, good night to you all.
This Is Your Life, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 8th of March, 1950, on NBC, wrapping up that two-part episode of The Life of Charlie McCarthy and this hour of True History, on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great shows from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for listening.